Well, we know we are dead when we die because our brain keeps working to make us aware of what's happening around us. Haunting new research suggests this. Top medical experts have forever been at loggerheads over what happens when we die, with evidence of bright lights and flashes reported by so many people who have come back being the cause of much debate. However, a new study suggests your consciousness carries on functioning after your heart stops beating and your body movements fail. Now, this means that you are essentially trapped inside your dead body with your brain still working, if only for a short time. That's kind of weird, isn't it? In a moment, we're talking with Julie Ryan, angelic attendants. What really happens as we transition from this life into the next? And welcome back to Coast. Julie Ryan is an inventor, author, entrepreneur, podcaster, medical intuitive, psychic, who learned some skills, have helped countless families understand the glorious side of the dying process. Now, this process that she believes involves angels, multitudes of deceased family and friends, the spirits of deceased pets as well, countless other situations, even miracles. The information Julie conveys brings peace at a time that seems filled with anything but peace, and with a new way for those left behind to embrace life through what they learn about the experience of death. Her book is called Angelic Attendants, What Really Happens as We Transition from This Life into the Next. Julie, looking forward to this, and welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir. I'm delighted to be here and honored.
Where are you these days?
I'm in Birmingham, Alabama, darling.
All right. There you are. How's the weather down there? It's pouring. I'm in St. Louis right now. It's pouring cats and dogs.
No, it's fabulous. It was low 80s and sunny yesterday.
Well, good. It's good to have you with us. Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Well, as you mentioned, I'm an inventor. I have invented orthopedic surgery devices that are sold throughout the world. And, George, they've been on the market. My first invention's been on the market for 30 years this year and still being sold. And I am an entrepreneur. I have founded 9 companies in 5 industries in the past 35 years. So I'm a businesswoman and an inventor who learned how to do woo-woo. That's what I tell people.
Well, good for you. And nice job with angelic attendants.
Thank you.
And I guess, let me ask you, first of all, before we get into more your work as a psychic, too, what do you think angels are?
I think they're just energy, like everything else.
And when you say just like energy, positive more so than negative, I assume, right?
Yes. Very high vibrational energy.
Okay. Now, you began somewhat psychic. How did that happen for you?
Well, I believe all of us are born with intuitive capabilities, and those of us that are interested in developing them have the wherewithal, or we find the wherewithal to do that, and that's exactly what happened with me. I'm not one of those psychics who's had dead people chasing her since childhood, or if I did, I didn't know it, let alone what I would have done had I known. So I learned how to be a psychic and medical intuitive, much like if you want to be a lawyer, you go to law school. If
sure.
If you want to be a doctor, you go to med school.
Are you glad you took that path?
Yes, sir, very much.
A lot of us have taken our paths, and sometimes people question the road they took, the road not taken, as Robert Frost would write, but good for you. Now, you're an inventor, so what have you invented?
I've invented orthopedic surgery devices. So my first invention...
Interesting.
Is a disposable auto transfusion device, which basically collects the person's blood during total joint surgery, like when they get new hips and new knees, and puts their own blood back into them so they don't have to use somebody else's blood or previously banked blood. And that's been sold, as I mentioned, around the world for decades. And then my other best well-known device is called the BASS, and that's a device used in arthroscopic surgery when a shoulder or a knee or a hip is scoped. And it's a big mat that goes on the floor that keeps the floor dry. It's hooked up to suction. When a shoulder or a knee is being scoped, huge amounts of irrigation fluid are used, like 30, 40, 50 liters of irrigation fluid, and it goes onto the floor of the operating room, and staff can slip and fall, and it's a mess. So I invented a mat that keeps the floor dry and protects the staff and keeps infections from spreading.
Good for you.
Infection control.
Story I had before you came on, Julie, that medical experts are now beginning to believe that consciousness exists after the brain and after the body dies, but the brain is still continuing. That's got to be a weird feeling to be in your body and you know you're dead and there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, I believe from what I've seen over the past 25 years, that's when I started doing this medical, intuitive, and psychic work. I believe what happens is that our spirit is the main part of us and the body is inside of the spirit. So as somebody's dying, the spirit is the power source for the body, George, which is why when somebody's dying and their spirit separates from their body doesn't work any longer. And so, you know, in near-death experiences, how people talk about going through a tunnel and then sometimes they're up above and they can
right.
see what's happening. That's what I perceive, is that the spirit attaches to the top of the head as the person's dying. And so they're perceiving it really from outside of the body, but it's still attached to the body and it's all holographic. So it's all intertwined.
And when they die, that spirit leaves the body totally, doesn't it?
Yes. That's what I perceive.
Do you believe in reincarnation?
Absolutely.
And that spirit, I assume, picks and chooses where it wants to go?
Exactly. That's what I perceive as well. We decide where we're born, to whom we're born, when we're born, what the circumstances are that we're born into, so that our spirit has the ability to have a basic trajectory of what we want to experience in that lifetime.
Now, you call the book Angelic Attendance. Tell me what that means.
Well, angels surround a person as they're dying, and they form different configurations as the person approaches death. And so they're attendants, like attendants at a wedding or a gas station attendant back in the day when somebody would come out and pump our gas for us. I'm old enough to remember that. And so they're attendants, they're helpers, if you will, to help the person transition into the next life.
And though you said they were energy, I picture attendants as being something not quite physical, obviously, but something very spiritual, but it's there. You can physically see it in that other side.
Yes, yes. I can see it when, what I do, George, is I raise my vibrational level to the level of spirit, which is a very high vibrational level. I turn it on and off at will. Don't walk around scanning people, because I don't think it's ethical to do that. So when the body and the spirit are attached, the body has mass, so the spirit vibrates more slowly. So by learning how to raise my vibrational level, I'm able to perceive spirit.
Interesting take. And you think pets also join us in the afterlife as well, too? I've always believed that.
Yes. Yes, they do. Absolutely. When I'm scanning someone who has a loved one who's dying, I can describe the pets that are there. And the first time I witnessed it myself was when my own mother was dying. And I saw dogs that were our dogs when I was a child. And I thought, oh, for heaven's sakes, you know, I mean, it was just wild.
They were all there, weren't they?
They were all there, and some of them had been dead for over 30 years.
That's amazing. Well, the beginning of your book says, what really happens as we transition from this life into the next? Give us your perspective, Julie, on what happens when somebody is dying, when they physically die, what happens to them? And do they know it right away?
Do they know that they're dead?
Yeah.
Yes, I believe they do. I believe they're very much aware of what's happening the whole time. And it's almost as if they have one foot in this reality, George, and one foot in the spirit reality, which is why all of the hospice information that I've ever seen with loved ones we've utilized hospice with them. The hospice literature even says, expect your loved ones to say they're seeing deceased loved ones, perhaps parents, perhaps religious figures. And I think most of us tend to believe that grandma's hallucinating, but actually grandma is not. Grandma can actually see those spirits that are there. I call them the Welcome to Heaven Committee.
I don't want to sound negative because that's not me, but where do demons and the devil fit in on the dying side?
I believe that they're fabrications of cultures and religions to help control the masses.
All right.
I don't believe they exist. I've never seen them in 25 years with working with countless families and doing this work. I don't believe they exist. I believe that all spirits are pure love and light.
But surely when an evil person, by the way, you're supposed to jump in and say, don't call me Shirley. But I always wanted to say that. But when someone does die who might be a what we would call a bad person, an evil person, they're not set on the same plateau as somebody who is benevolent and nice and, you know, helpful to humanity, are they?
They are. It's been what my perception that we're all pure love and light in spirit form. And again, it goes back to we have a basic desire to experience something in this lifetime. And I believe in the spirit world, George, there's no right or wrong. Everything's just neutral. Everything's just an experience. So something that we as humans perceive as horrific, for example, say the Holocaust.
Sure. Would you put Hitler on the same ground as somebody else?
Yes, I do, because his spirit is pure love and light. And what I perceive is in different lifetimes, perhaps we can have multiple lifetimes with the same basic storyline, just a different set of variables like, you know, where they live and what the year was and what their position is. So who's to say that Hitler perhaps wasn't persecuted in a former life? And in the lifetime that he lived during World War II, he was the one, he wanted to experience what it was like to be the persecutor.
Well, that's conceivable, but I'm in shock, actually, to think that a spirit like that, well, let's distinguish this. Are you saying the spirit is different from the human? In that the human Hitler was despicable, but that the spirit Hitler was something else?
Yes, yes. And I think that it's really hard for us in our human minds to comprehend that concept.
Yes.
Because we're all surrounded with good and bad, you know, good and
yeah.
evil.
I mean, I'm having a difficult time comprehending.
Yeah, yeah. But my perception, George, is that all spirits are pure love and light. And again, in the spirit world, there's no judgment. There's just everything's just an experience. So, and again, this is hard for our human brains to, you know, wrap our heads around. But in the spirit world, Hitler and what he did would be just an experience to a spirit, whereas we humans would see that as a horrific occurrence.
Why do you think that? And someone else would say, no, Julie, his evil spirit is burning in hell right now. But why do you think that?
Well, through lots of work with countless families and countless spirits over 25 years, and also conversing with spirit over 25 years, that's what I'm told repeatedly. There is no hell. All spirits are pure love and light.
Now, we always hear the story about the Akashic Records, the hall of records of our life since we were born, the things that we did good, the things that we did bad. Do they exist?
I believe they do for all of our lifetimes.
But if someone in that hall of records performed bad deeds, what's the purpose of having it in that book?
It's an experience.
If there's no punishment for it.
Well, it's an experience. Again, it's just an experience. There's no judgment. And each experience that we have, we expand. And I believe that we're here to co-create with God. And even something that we see as horrific, that spirit expands from there and moves on to another experience that would be something that would be based on its experience in previous lifetimes.
Let's talk about the angelic experience again. And do you believe that all of us have an assigned guardian angel?
I do. And I see that guardian angel in surgery when somebody's in the OR. Flies over the head of anesthesia.
Does it have wings?
It does as I perceive it. But I was raised through 12 years of Catholic schools, so
oh, yeah.
That's how I was taught angels look. to someone who's raised perhaps in a different culture or a different religion, it may just be a purple ball of energy, angels. But angels, as I perceive them, look like what the statues of angels look like, you know, big wings, white gown.
Who assigns them to watch us?
Good question. Who assigns angels?
I may have finally stumped you.
Yeah. I've never been asked that question before.
Really?
So yeah, let me ask. When my son was little, my son's 27 and getting married in 2 weeks, George. So we're in wedding mode down here in the deep.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yes, it is. When he was little, he used to say, "Mommy, ask the spirits and beyond." So I'm going to ask the spirits and beyond. Who assigns our angels? I get that our spirit chooses our guardian angels. What I have heard many, many times, George, is that our guardian angel is with us through all of our lifetimes.
I believe that. Do we have more than one?
We have more angels show up in different times during our lives when they're needed. For instance, when we're dying, there are more angels that are brought in. And so we do have other angels that come in and out of our life at different times. But we have one main guardian angel. And as I mentioned, I see them all the time when somebody's in surgery and I'm scanning them real time when they're having surgery and reporting to the family what's going on.
That's an interesting take on all of that. Now, when people cross over with these near-death experiences, then they come back. One example is one of our guests, Danyon Brinkley. He has now died 4 times. Mm-hmm. And he's come back 4 times. Mm-hmm. I think they keep throwing him back, actually. But what are they experiencing when they're in this near-death experience? Because, you know, we hear, as you mentioned earlier, floating above the body, hearing, you know, doctors talking about the dead person, and they come back and say, "Doc, you were saying this about me," and some of these doctors are in shock because this person actually heard them when he was supposed to be dead. But what is the near-death experience?
Well, the near-death experience is that the body is separating from the spirit. Again, as I mentioned earlier, what I perceive is that the spirit is the main part of us, the everlasting part of us, and the body goes inside of it, George. The best analogy I've come up with when I am working with somebody is I describe it as if you imagine going to the pet store and buying a goldfish. They're going to put the goldfish in a plastic bag of water in order for you to get it home. Well, if you have a picture of that in your mind's eye, the goldfish represents our body, the water represents our spirit, and the plastic bag represents an energy field membrane that is the container for the hologram that is our body and our spirit. So as somebody is dying, imagine that fish is coming out of the water. The fish is separating. The body is separating from the spirit. And so it separates up through the top of the head and then hangs on to the top of the head as the person's dying. And it looks like the bubble in a cartoon caption to me, where the words or the character's thoughts would be. And so that's what they experience with going through the tunnel. And then back to, they oftentimes will describe that they're above something and looking down. So that would correlate with that bubble configuration that I see.
Knowing this, and we're in no hurry to step out of this world, but knowing this, are you afraid of dying?
Not at all.
It's like a transition.
It's a transition.
And again, no rush to get there.
Right. But we all decide when we go, where we go, who's with us when we die. It's all the person's prerogative to come up with all of those different parameters. And if you talk to any funeral director, they have countless stories about the family sat with grandma for 3 weeks. Somebody got up to get a cup of coffee and grandma slipped away while they were out of the room.
Yeah, that's true. Julie, stay with us. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more about angelic attendance. Next hour, we'll take phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back with Julie Ryan, author of Angelic Attendance. Julie's website, askjulieryan.com, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And Julie, for the many who are emailing right now wanting to know where to get your book, I assume Amazon.com has it?
Amazon has it. Libraries have it. Barnes & Noble has it. It's in audiobook digital and also paperback.
Isn't it cool going into a bookstore seeing your book on the shelves?
It's pretty amazing, George, yes.
Do you sometimes sneak around and watch people to see if they grab the book and look at it?
I haven't done that yet, but that's a good suggestion.
That's kind of cool. That's kind of cool. And then you say, want me to sign it for you? And they freak out. They do. In chapter 4 of the book, it's called 12 Phases of Transition. What does that mean?
That's a configuration that I see angels and deceased loved ones' spirits and pet spirits assume different configurations as the person is approaching death. So I can scan somebody anywhere in the world. I don't need to be with them. I'm never with them, usually, unless it's a family member or a loved one. And I can see what phase they're in, and I can communicate with the person who's dying telepathically, even if they're unable to communicate themselves with their family, and I can tell how close to death they are.
Now, do these 12 phases all occur in the death cycle or when you're alive too?
In the death cycle when somebody's dying, and they can happen, George, instantly, like in the case of a homicide or suicide or instant death, and they can take days, weeks, months, sometimes even years for the person to go through all 12 phases, but everybody goes through all 12 phases.
Julie, what's your take on hauntings? I mean, why are these ghosts or spirits haunting people and things?
I believe that we're all surrounded by spirits 24/7, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And some of us have our intuitive capabilities turned up. Remember, we talked about that I raised my vibrational level to the level of spirit. I think some of us are able to perceive spirit, and it's scary because it's not something that we've been educated on or that we're used to. But then you hear about little children that have imaginary friends oftentimes.
Oh, yeah.
And people say, oh, Johnny has this little friend. It's his, you know, imaginary friend. Well, Johnny actually has a friend, and Johnny can actually perceive that friend. What I find, George, is that by the age of about 6 or 7, most little children are starting to have filters put in place where their intuitive capabilities are starting to be tamped down. And what I believe is that as we as a culture have become more educated and more scientifically prove-it-to-me based, we disregard our intuitive capabilities and intuitive information that we receive.
I had a story years ago of a little girl who used to talk to her parents about her little girl imaginary friend, and the parents thought it was kind of cute, until one day it scared the living daylights out of them because the little girl said, and let's just say her friend's name was Ava, she said, Ava told me today that she died here. And that kind of took the parents back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, what do you mean, sweetie? And she said, well, Ava said that she was killed here and they buried her bones right here, Mommy. And there was a wooden floor there. And it really freaked the parents out. So much so, they called somebody to come and open up the floor. And sure enough, there was the skeleton of the little girl.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is that creepy?
Well, what I hear, most of my friends now have grandchildren, and the stories I'm hearing, George, from friends and family and also from clients, because most of the work I do is medical intuitive work. It's like I'm a human MRI.
You're like Edgar Casey.
Well, I can see broken bones, torn ligaments, viral infections, bacterial infections, cancer. I see it when it's metastasized. It's like I'm looking at an X-ray or a CT scan or an MRI. But oftentimes, I'll get a call from a friend who has a grandchild who will say, you won't believe what my grandson said today. And a lot of times it has to do with past lives. And little children oftentimes will talk about past lives. And one in particular happened recently. My girlfriend Deborah called, and her grandson, Walter, is that a great name for a 4-year-old?
Yeah.
Walter said, Mommy, you're my favorite of all my mommies. And she said, well, hey, I'm your only mommy. And he said, no, Mom, of all my mommies. And she said, what are you talking about? And he said, well, Mom, babies are born to mommies and daddies. They grow up, they die. Then they come back and they're born to different mommy and daddies. And you're my favorite mommy. That just happened recently. And so I hear stories like that all the time. I think little people, their intuitive capabilities are turned on still till the age of about, like I mentioned, 6 or 7.
Chapter 5 in the book, Walk to Heaven. Tell me about that.
Sometimes when I'm working with somebody who's dying, George, they're very afraid to die because they've been so inundated with culture and religion.
Mm-hmm, of course.
That, you know, talk about purgatory or hell, or my own father was that way. My father was studying to be a priest for 5 years, and he studied in Rome. You know, he drank the serious Kool-Aid about purgatory and hell, and he was afraid to die. So what I do with that person who's afraid to die is I will separate my spirit from my body temporarily, go with their spirit, and we'll do what I call the walk to heaven. And it's kind of a dress rehearsal of what's going to happen when they die, when they actually die and they transition. And what I find is that normally it will give them enough comfort when they know what's going to happen that then they can go ahead and transition. The one person with whom I worked was a nun who was dying. She was in her 90s, and she was so afraid to die. And it took 3 walks to heaven before she was comfortable with letting go and dying.
Interesting take on that. You know, you were mentioning that you were raised a strong and stern Catholic. You know, I went to, you know, catechism and things like that. So I went through the Catholic end of it too.
Mm-hmm.
They really teach you the biblical ways of heaven and hell. I mean, and angels and things. And are you saying none of that's right?
No, I think some of it's right, but I don't believe that when we die, angels drop us in a burning pit for eternity. I've never seen that. I don't believe it exists. Interestingly enough, about the Catholic thing, at the end of every Catholic funeral, there's a prayer that's said called In Paradisum, and it talks about how our angels and deceased loved ones will greet us and lead us into paradise. And it originated as a 5th century Gregorian chant, George, and it describes exactly what I see when I'm seeing these 12 phases of transition. So I have to believe that since the beginning of time, people have been able to see these 12 phases of transition, what I have coined the 12 phases of transition. But perhaps it took till the 5th century till some people were learned enough, and the most learned men were in monasteries at that point. They were learned enough and, well, you know, well-educated enough that they could read and write, and they constructed that Gregorian chant, which is a prayer, and it describes what I see. So I find that there's lots of information in the religious texts of all cultures that basically correlate with these different phases of transition that I witness.
Why does it appear, Julie, that our deceased loved ones are there at the foot of the bed before somebody dies?
I think they're part of what I call the Welcome to Heaven Committee. Do you remember the Welcome Wagon ladies?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
when
they'd
come to your neighborhood with a basket of stuff.
Exactly. And so
they never brought the right stuff.
So I call this the Welcome to Heaven Committee. And they're all there. And again, the first time I saw this, and I describe it in my book, was when my own mother was dying. And I saw people who'd been dead for decades. Their spirits were in their room, George. It was wild that I was thinking, oh, my goodness, am I hallucinating? But it made so much sense, the people's spirits who were there, because they played important parts in my mother's life, even to the point where I saw family members who had been long gone of my mother's that I never met, but I had seen pictures of them, and even animals that she'd had growing up. When at her funeral, I was asking my uncle, her only sibling, her brother, and I was describing these dogs to him, and he was saying, oh, yeah, that was Rusty, or that was Fluffy, or, you know, whatever their names were. So I find that it's very reassuring to the family who has a loved one who's dying when I'm describing what their family members look like who are there present. And then, again, that goes along with what we read in the hospice literature. You know, expect your dying loved one to see deceased family members.
Is there a need on the other side to learn something when you die? I mean, is there like an educational course or a guide, a how-to when you pass over?
What I hear from Spirit, George, is that dying is so much easier than being born. Being born is, you know, involves a lot of pain and a lot of labor on the woman's part who's giving birth. But dying is just, they just slip into a different reality. And it's I use the analogy of, remember, and I know you've been in emergency rooms where they have bays and they'll have a curtain that goes
around the bed, right?
So, for instance, if you're in one of those bays and the curtain's open, you can see the person next to you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they close the curtain, you can't see the person anymore, but the person's still there.
And you can hear them, too.
And you can hear them. And so that's what I perceive when we go into non-physical or just purely spirit form. Well, we're still there. It's just that most people, through our normal five senses, human senses, can't perceive it unless they're intuitive or they turn their abilities on like I do.
So this talk about St. Peter at the Golden Gates, when you die, no, doesn't exist?
Well, no, there's no judgment. All spirits are pure love and light, so there's no judgment.
So you're saying when someone dies, regardless of what they were like on the planet, their spirit goes to this spot, we'll call it heaven, and it's enlightened, and it has no emotion, obviously, and it's not good, it's not bad, it's just there?
It's pure bliss. It's pure bliss. So we have a roller coaster ride of emotions, and if someone is a challenge in life, all that drama of their personality stays with the body when somebody dies. Their spirit is pure love and light, but all of the perhaps snarkiness of their personality stays with the body. And so that's really interesting when I'm working with someone who has lost a loved one, perhaps that's been abusive, and they're trying to wrap their head around, well, this spirit is pure love and light. I mean, this person was awful when they were alive. But then when we start communicating with the deceased loved one and they see that it's all positive that's coming from them, they can start to grasp that over time.
Let's talk in the minutes we have left here, Julie, and we'll take calls with you next hour. When our pets join us in the afterlife, what is their mission, their role?
I think just companions. You know, they're there to provide joy to us and be companions. I do think that there are animal messengers. Hawks are a great example. Hawks are spiritual messengers, supposedly from the divine. And it was so funny the other morning, George, I was walking. It was early in the morning, and I see a hawk. There's a hawk or two that walk with me
mm-hmm.
this morning. On my
That's roof. Funny.
And a couple mornings ago, my husband had called, and he needed me to send him something. So I was walking and texting him, and this hawk shadow flew over my head low. I felt like I was in a Hitchcock movie. And I thought, okay, good morning. I see you. I'm sorry I wasn't paying attention. It was hilarious. But they're spiritual messengers that you hear throughout every culture. There are animal spiritual messengers that appear oftentimes when during time of turmoil or when somebody needs a little extra reinforcement for what they're going through.
They say owls represent the human spirit sometimes. What do you think
yeah.
of that?
Yes, I think they can. I think they are messengers.
They're strange looking birds, aren't they?
Well, it's
the way they turn their heads and their necks and things
yeah.
like that.
Well, I see that as them being very curious. They look like very curious animals to me.
One of my favorite movies, It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
I used to listen to it and watch it every Christmas. My mother showed it to me when I was a little kid and never forgot it. But it was about a guy played by Jimmy Stewart. His name was George Bailey in the movie, who had things going so wrong he wanted to end his life.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent an angel down to save him. And the angel pretended to be drowning, so George jumps into this river and saves the angel, and they became friends, and the angel, you know, finally admitted to him that he was an angel here to save him because he was going to kill himself, and he took him through life, what life would be like if George Bailey was not there. And it's a great movie. I mean, if people haven't seen it, it's in black and white, but it's well worth watching, renting it, buying the DVD, whatever you have to do. But who are those individuals, Julie, who sent Clarence the Angel down to save George Bailey? Does that happen?
Oh, I think it does. I think there are many, many stories that all of a sudden somebody shows up and lifts the car off of a child that the car is rolled over on, and stories like that. And who sends them? Perhaps the guardian angel. Perhaps it's the person's spirit that's calling in for reinforcement, for help. That, I think, is a great example of that relates to the question you asked earlier about, do we have extra angels that show up in our lives? A lot of us have had experiences where something has happened and somebody has done something really terrific for us at a time, in a time of need, and then we go to find that person and they're nowhere to be found. I think those perhaps could be angels that are taking human form to help us.
We get, every once in a while, we'll do open lines with angelic stories, and we get some incredible stories about people who have been helped by what could be an angel, from drowning or just about anything, and just amazing stories. Let's even try for that when we come back. Questions for Julie Ryan about her work, angelic attendance, or even your stories, share them with us on Coast to Coast AM. And as I mentioned, Julie's website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com.